is the UR Business Network.
And welcome to the Entrepreneurs Guild. This is your host, Tom Stemple, and today I'm joined by our guest, Hugh Glaser, from the Winterview Group in Marblehead Bass. Welcome, Hugh.
Thank you, Tom. Good afternoon.
It's great to have you here. Hugh is a CPA and CEO's best friend, right? helps to solve business problems. He's had 20 years as an advisor, helping improve business performance and mentoring CEOs and CFOs. All sounds very familiar.
Yeah, I've seen a number of things, and although I'm still young enough where I guess nothing surprises me, but you still every once in a while come across some unique situations that you've not encountered before, and that's why part of why I like working with entrepreneurs and small companies is this creative spirit and drive that is so very exciting to me.
Yeah, it's refreshing to see a different set of problems sometimes, because I know in my business sometimes I see the same stuff over and over, and it can get a little frustrating.
Well, I think every company is unique, Tom, but there are patterns and cycles of things that are very common. And one of my favorite books is called Leading at the Speed of Growth, and it talks about these stages. And and I think that what entrepreneurs that have had some success don't realize is how unique an individual Bill Gates or Michael Dell is from the point of view of these folks. These guys started in the garage, and they're CEOs of Fortune 10 or whatever size companies.
Right.
And most entrepreneurs, that's a huge, huge stretch. So they often need help and assistance helping them move from stage to stage.
Right, right. Very true. Well, as we start the show today, I'm going to ask you one of my favorite questions, one of the things I typically ask all of my guests, and that is, how and when and why were you first smitten by the entrepreneurial bug?
You know, I kind of maybe fell into it, but it may also sort of have genetic links. I grew up in a family where there was a family business on both my mother's side of the family and my father's side of the family. And I'm like, hey, and actually they were both very unique kind of niche businesses. My father and grandfather were in the hat business, and my great-grandfather on my mother's side was in the iron ore smelting, you could call it the junk business, but at a high level. So they were very esoteric, but it gave me a whole sense of what happens with generation to generations, because in both cases, there was a point where the next transition didn't go well. I think that's where it got started. And then I've always been in situations early in my career where I was the first financial or CFO type in an organization.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm very used to working in an environment where I was the first, and you had to invent, create things out of whole cloth. And it's very exciting, and working with people and their ideas. And early in my career, when I was trying to figure this all out, I spent a lot of time around the MIT Enterprise Forum.
Oh, yeah.
Another great laboratory for learning about early stage companies, and particularly with a technology focus.
Yeah, great. That's great. Well, that family background certainly gives you a little bit of a jump start on the whole concept of being an entrepreneur and the uniqueness of that, and the difference between being an entrepreneur and being someone in the corporate world. Now, one of the things that that you mentioned to me before in an email you wrote me was one of my favorite topics to really harp on when we talk finance, and that is the fact that most entrepreneurs, or many entrepreneurs at least, don't really understand the difference between cash flow and profit.
And that's a big thing not to know the difference of.
Yeah,
it is common, because what happens is everybody's comfortable with cash. It's I pay you, I have money in my wallet. You pay me or pay someone else, you don't have money in your wallet. And that's where the accounting, and particularly on the accrual basis, is really the way you tell the measure of how you're doing over time. And I also worked early in my career as a bank teller during college a couple of summers. And it was always these customers that would come up, and they weren't necessarily making a deposit, but they'd be asking for their balance every day.
Yeah.
And then talking to a bank manager that was sort of befriending me, he said, what's up with this? And he says, well, they think They don't keep any, do any bookkeeping. They don't have any records. They think that's telling them how they're doing. So, but as it turns out, because there's so many items in transit, so to speak, and think about if I write you a check and you don't cash it for 2 weeks, that's already, I've spent the money even though it hasn't come out of my bank account. What it's hard for people to learn is the activity going through your bank account, which is the primary way you would recognize cash, is not the measure for how the business is doing.
Right.
You sell goods. If you sell them on credit, you send someone a bill, well, you've earned the money today. But if they don't pay you for 2 weeks, so that's – there's a timing cycle, and it's for people that aren't familiar or don't have had any training, which who walks around getting trained in accounting, it's natural that they wouldn't figure that out intuitively. And that's one of the things I kind of find, you know, there's an element of my work that is sort of teaching, mentoring, and kind of explaining to people, you know, here's how your business works, and here's sort of the business plumbing in the back room. Because I often say that no one starts a business because they want to do the accounting, bookkeeping, and filing tax returns. But the necessary evil of success is you have to tend to these things.
Right, right.
And if it's not something that's in your own inclination to do, you need to get a good advisor to help you set the path. And a lot of it's pretty simple, particularly if you get it set up to do it right from day one.
Yeah, that's really important that people understand. I mean, I've come into circumstances where people are managing their business based on their checkbook balance, you know, which is always a problem. But even worse than that, it's people who don't understand the difference between an accrual basis and a cash basis business, and they wind up mixing the two.
Right.
And so they get all confused. So, yeah, you're right. Setting it up properly to start with is really
it's very important when you, with companies that – there's a big time lag, and it can go either way between when they have to pay payroll, pay their vendors, and they collect their money from their customers. The only place that cash is really close to being accurate is probably in a retail, sort of like a convenience store or liquor store kind of market. But once you get into more, you know, organizations with more parts, the timing, it's all about the timing and understanding that the events in and out of your bank account on any given day are not reflective of what the business did that day.
Yeah, it's one of the reasons why we really promote the notion of making certain that people know how to do a cash flow statement and manage their business, you know, largely on that basis. One of the other areas that companies frequently do a really poor job of is figuring out how to invest in sales, marketing, customer service, those kinds of things.
I think, yeah, that's very important. A lot of times I'll watch how organizations treat their customers or clients, and it makes me almost wonder why they're in business.
yes.
You know, that the professional that doesn't want to take a call from a client or doesn't call the client back for weeks at a time or someone that will send you a, you send an email to their office and the response is, well, we'll get back to you, but it might not be 2 or 3 days. You know, we're in an age today where you have sort of the intersection of two things. The technology exists for almost for instantaneous response, and then that lead, and I'm not saying that we always need to respond to everything immediately, but it also gives the expectation that there should be instantaneous response. And I like to work with companies about understanding who your customer is, touching them, putting the right tools in place to get support. Because the thing I learned, I've done a lot of turnaround work, which is working with troubled companies, companies that can't pay their bills.
Right.
And the natural inclination is when a vendor calls and you can't pay them is to not answer the phone.
Yeah, wrong thing to do.
And what I train people, look, when things are tough, the best thing is to be as honest as you can and at least acknowledge that the person called.
Yep.
Or if a customer has a complaint, you may not have an answer, but people want to be touched, whether they're calling to complain or they have a need. And I think that's very important. There's another concept that's out today called the Net Promoter Score, and that's where you're getting a lot of companies that are constantly doing feedback, whether you had a interaction with a technical support person, whether you bought something or you made a phone call, they want to know how they did.
Right.
And it's sometimes responding to those gets a little tedious, but it's a sign of a company that's looking to improve itself.
Right, right.
And I think that's very, very important for organizations, particularly if you're success is more broader scale and building clients and understanding that it's less expensive to solve an issue that an existing customer has than the cost of finding a new customer that has no relationship with you.
Absolutely, and I don't think many entrepreneurs understand that. The cost of acquiring a new customer is really, really pretty significant in the vast majority of cases. You know, you mentioned you know, in this day and age, we have the ability to do, you know, instant feedback. And really, honestly, when your clients call, when your vendors call, just based on the day and the times, they're looking for some instant gratification of their own. So it is wise to get back to those people immediately, even if it's even if you have an incomplete answer to whatever they're looking for. You know, as you suggested, the other thing I sometimes wonder is if in a company, if all the employees really understand how the business makes money and who their profitable customers are and, you know, those types of things. What have you come across?
Well, that actually is a very other symptom that I see way too much of, and exactly that because it's got to do with behavior of not only the leadership of the company, but the rank and file, and the teams sees what the actions of the leadership are. So if everybody isn't on the same page when it comes to that, I oftentimes do when it's clear that an organization doesn't get the message, I have a presentation I call "This is Your Paycheck." That on the far right is a icon of your paycheck, and then talking about the whole process that has to come in front of that. And it's all about if you're not keeping your customers or your clients happy, they go somewhere else the next time.
Yeah.
And that's so I think that's very important to understand how an organization makes its profit or contribution margin is critical, and everybody on the team should do that, should understand that. And the CEOs and leaderships of companies, I think, need to do a better job of training that and understanding. And I think it's also, particularly in service organizations, understanding where new business comes from.
Right.
I think that grooming younger members of the team on how to get business and develop relationships that can position them to get leads and learn business opportunities is another place that particularly service organizations could do a better job of.
Mm-hmm. Now, you do a lot of work with not-for-profits as well. What similarities and differences do you see? What would you recommend to someone running a nonprofit?
Well, I think the first thing is that even it's a semantic pet peeve of mine is I like to refer to them as not-for-profit.
Right.
Because an organization that thinks it's non-profit will, put itself down the wrong path very quickly. I think they do the same business tendencies. And to me, the running of the organization and the training and leading of the team is the same. It's just that the mission is different.
Right, right.
In a commercial entity, it usually comes back to profit, shareholders, return on investments. In a not-for-profit, it's we have a constituency that we're trying to serve, and while we're not in it to make money to return to an investor, we need to do the service and serve the audience's needs as best as possible and not be losing money.
Right.
Because if we continue to have a negative bottom line, we won't be around to help the mission the next year. So it's the same business, particularly on cash flow, as you were talking about, and planning, and in some cases, particularly if it's a not-for-profit that's donation or development-driven, they need to always they're selling too. Or if it's education or social services, it's grant-related, so you need to know how to go up. So that it's really the same basic skills of building and running an organization. It's just that you're doing it in a different filter.
Right.
And maybe some of the decisions of how you make choices are a little different because a commercial enterprise is making a different kind of long-term investment, whereas social or a nonprofit organization need to be thinking more about how do we, you know, sustain the next 12 or 24 months.
Right, right. Yeah, it's a difference in the bottom line. If you're a commercial organization and you've got money at the end of the year, you know, what are you going to do with that? Are you going to pay dividends? Are you going to, you know, roll it into retained earnings? Are you going to invest it in a piece of equipment or something like that? Whereas in a not-for-profit scenario, it's a great position for them to be in because they can invest in their not-for-profit at a higher level. And I think a lot of people who are considering the organization of a not-for-profit business don't realize that you can make a profit. It's just how you distribute that profit is different than in
right.
a public corporation.
And
instance,
some yeah. not-for-profits are very successful. I worked for one that was extremely successful.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to tell the story that when I was in public accounting, if I had a commercial business that made the same kind of profit and we couldn't have found a tax strategy to go, because not even though they're not-for-profits, commercial businesses run by non-for-profits are subject to income tax.
Sure.
And they don't have any of the tax planning tools that a commercial enterprise would have. So, but as you were saying, Tom, it allows you to take the profit
mm-hmm.
and reinvest it in the mission.
Right,
so
right.
We can do more. We can serve more people. We can provide more program.
Mm-hmm.
But it all has to come back to the same discipline and good business practices of how to pinch a penny, if that's the right thing, in terms of running the business so you can get a better return for your audience that the service, the nonprofit is focused on
right.
Meeting.
Right, excellent. So how would a company benefit, any company, whether they're big or small, not-for-profit or profit enterprise, how would you describe to them the ways that they would benefit by having a consulting CFO or a part-time CFO?
Well, in some ways, if you're working with the CEO, you could almost call it a version of business therapy.
Yeah.
that's someone
true.
That's had a background and work in a variety of organizations understands the issues. Being the boss is a lonely job.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've managed groups of 20 to 30 on several occasions in my career. And, at the end of the day, you have to sometimes make decisions that aren't popular. So it gives the CEO someone that understands, you know, the basic core of what they're doing. The part-time CFO role works out well because you have companies that often don't need it on a full-time basis. They just need, the company isn't that big or growing that fast, but need someone to kind of come in, tweak, overlook, whether it's a bookkeeper, accounting manager, just a little bit more experience and a broader range of things to work with the CEO's team to just stay focused. It also helps maybe get you better prepared for the traditional year-end tax returns, financial statements, and things like that that a public accounting firm might do. So
mm-hmm.
it's just another resource to kind of sit and work with the team. I do a lot of mentoring of the staff, the accounting and financial staff at clients. So it's another on a well-run company, it might be considered belt and suspenders,
mm-hmm.
but in a company that's got growing pains, that's a little outside the reach of the experience of the partners or the CEO, it's just giving them that added cushion to move forward.
Well, certainly the notion of being able to provide some mentoring and just some good business sense to folks is beyond the scope of what an awful lot of what I'll call part-time CFOs do. So I compliment you on that. That's a really important aspect of just about any consulting engagement as far as I'm concerned. So what would you say is perhaps one of the more unusual sets of circumstances that you've come across recently, and how are you able to resolve that?
That's any particular nuance of that, or I've worked in situations where I had a family-owned business that was approaching its 100th anniversary, and
wow.
I was helping the third-generation nephew take over from his uncle. We had a whole plan of attack put together, and through a circumstance, I still don't understand, all of a sudden the nephew decided he didn't want to do this anymore.
Oh, no.
We had been having board meetings about the plan, and after the nephew left, a month and a half into it, the uncle, who now we had to put back on the CEO chair, wasn't really following the plan. And I said to him, John, what's up? We've been talking about this for, at that point, 10, 11 months. We're not executing. And the business was still deteriorating. That's the kind of the key point through all of this.
That's scary.
And he said to me, you should have known by my silence in those meetings I didn't agree with the plan. And then, unfortunately, the business ended up having to be sold within the next year. And after 100 years of family effort, the remaining descendant got a job offer for 5 years. And that's sad. You don't like to see that. So people get themselves into situations, and sometimes they're their own worst enemy.
That's tough. It's amazing what people will assume that you're gleaning from a conversation or a lack of conversation.
And that's, it's even in family relationships. If you got a problem, if you don't speak up, I or anyone else, no matter how good the consultant, isn't a mind reader.
Yeah, I know.
So if it's on your mind, put it on the table. And I think a lot of my work, I tell people, is helping you ask the right questions.
That's key.
And if you don't like the answer, that's where we go to work.
Or ask another question. Yeah, that's a great way of approaching things, is to helping people communicate better,
right,
while you're mentoring and solving problems and so on and so forth. So what would you say is your ideal client? What's that look like to you?
Ideal client. Well, it would be in the winter, it would be someone that wants to meet at a ski slope. But I think it's a privately held company that has a sense of where they want to go, but they're looking for someone that can come in and be their almost like business partner in terms of helping them move forward and look at best processes. They do a lot of work, particularly with larger companies that actually have an in-place CFO, helping them find best of breeds kinds of applications. Because my background is I'm a financial guy. I'm an operating focused person, and I like to try to help people do a better job, find better tools. How can we be more responsive to the customer? How can we make the job easier for the person doing it so they can get it done in 3 hours and not five, and have a little time? Because I think one of the problems today is if you don't have the right process, people, particularly in an accounting department, are exhausted by the time they get done processing the transaction.
Right.
And it's not about processing the transaction in terms of how you run the business. It's looking at the data the transaction creates and what does that mean about where the business is going.
Right.
So if people are all consumed getting the transaction done, there's no time to sit back and really understand what the numbers are telling us. So that's what I try to help. People that understand that and want to move the ball forward, they're looking to try and find a better way to do their mission, issue their product, provide their service, make more money. Yeah, there's nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
As well, and part of what I try to do is help connect people. If it isn't something that's within my scope of knowledge, is to find another resource that they can call upon. I'm very big at trying to connect people and make business relationships that work for folks.
Perfect. Well, listen, this has really been a great discussion. I appreciate your being here today. I want to make sure that people know how to get a hold of you. So if you can share your contact information.
All right. You can find me on the web at www.winterviewgroup.com. That's all one word. I'm also on LinkedIn. I'm easy to find there as well.
All right, great. Is there a particular email or phone number you want to hand out?
I think it's info@winterviewgroup.com, and it's also on the website.
Okay, great. And for our listeners today also, I'd like to remind you to go to the Aspiring Entrepreneurs Guild website to learn about the organization. There you can also search through our online library and to listen to other interviews from this show. So go to www.ouraeguild.com. So this is Tom Stemple. Thank you for listening today on the UR Business Network, and may your business thrive.
This is the UR Business Network.